Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast you really don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak peek at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. You'll find out their secret recipe for creating books, where they get their ideas, how they create their characters, and you'll get the inside scoop on their next project. Want to know more? Terrific. We'll tell you where to find them on social media. Okay, are you ready? All right, let's meet today's author. Joining me is Larry Weiss, and he's here to talk about his latest novel, Girl with the Rose Tattoo. Now, Larry is a pretty interesting guy. I love it. If you go to his website, he calls himself Larry Weiss, comma, novelist, with a lowercase n. He says he hopes to earn the uppercase N as he continues writing. He was in the field of education for 27 years, and as a natural storyteller, here's what he has to say about storytelling. Storytelling is more fun than the proverbial barrel of monkeys. Larry, I love it. Welcome to Books on Air.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, you have done something that I think is very, very, very interesting and very difficult. When I looked at Girl with the Rose Tattoo, I realized that, first of all, the main character, Tina Douglas, is an 18-year-old female. Larry, you are neither 18, yep, nor are you a female. So, I think you have done one of the most difficult things an author can do. You have written a book about another gender and another age group. I have several questions. First, where did Tina Douglas come from as a character for you? And then how were you able to find Tina Douglas's voice? Because you have.
Well, to start with, Tina Douglas is kind of a necessary person for me to explore. I have two granddaughters. One is 15 and the other is 21. And they both have all the advantages in the world, and they're doing really well, and they're making really good decisions. Now, Tina Douglas, unfortunately, isn't that kind of a person. She's really a good person, but she comes from a broken home, from a very unaffectionate mother. She's thrown out of her house, and she runs to the first person she can think of, who is turns out to be exactly the wrong person to run to. So it's a situation where someone is desperate, needs somebody, makes a bad choice, and the consequences of that lead to basically what happens in the story.
Was she inspired by your granddaughters? How did she come to you as a character? I find this so interesting.
Well, she's inspired by my granddaughters on the positive side, and then she's inspired by a young woman I encountered maybe two and three quarter years ago, who's in some ways exactly like that. She doesn't come from a broken home, but she kind of got herself into a situation which wasn't the best. And she broke out of it. And in some ways, I had a little bit to do with helping her break out of it. But it's the kind of person that I think about, because when you don't have all the advantages and you don't have all the comforts of a good upbringing, how do you succeed in life? If you don't meet the right person, if you don't bump into the right person, you're in the soup. You're not likely to get out of the hole. So I wanted to provide a situation for a really nice young woman who got herself into hot water to have a chance to climb out and become basically, I like to think of her as going from zero to hero in the course of the story.
You also describe, I mean, I was really surprised by this. When I started to read the novel, you even describe clothing that she is going to wear. Did you talk to your granddaughters about this? Did they read what you said? How did you, I mean, you've got the voice. You've done a really, really fine job. You have the voice of this 18-year-old young woman, and she's worried about, she's about to graduate from high school, and you have her thinking about what she's going to wear to graduation, and you describe it for us. I was stunned. I thought, where did he get this information?
I'm a pretty persistent researcher. And one of the reasons the book took a while is that it's set in 1985. So the culture in 1985 is certainly different. The clothing choices are certainly different. You'll see references to music that Tina likes to listen to. It's all of that era. That's research. That's a lot of research, listening to heavy metal, listening to, I'm trying to remember the other ilk of music that I can't actually put my finger on the name anymore, but that, and then sheets and sheets and sheets of things that came off the internet that talked about clothing. And then because she's punk, kind of a punky kind of girl, I had to see what the punk kids were wearing then. So it's research, really. And that's an interesting thing, because when you write fiction, you can write a really good story. But if it's a period piece, which this in a way is, you've got to be accurate. So there's lots of research. And I could visualize her always as I kind of dressed her in these various outfits.
I think that's so important to hear you say, because when you write fiction, and I've written a little fiction myself, when you write fiction, the characters are not actors. They look like an individual themselves. You see Tina as a person and an individual when you think about her and when you're writing about her. And I think that's one of the most magical qualities about the author brain and about how characters are created and how you actually see the action as it's about to happen. Are you an outliner or are you a pantser? Do you sit down and outline everything that you're going to do and know almost exactly what you're going to write? Or do you sit down and either sit at the computer or with a pad and begin to write and the story unfolds in your head like a movie?
It's probably more the second, although I always make an attempt to outline in a sketchy sense. So if I have a chapter with four or five scenes in it, I have the intent of the scene just kind of written in a, you know, one word. The scene is supposed to indicate such and such, just so I can keep myself consistent. But in some ways it unfolds. The story arc was there in the sense that I knew where she came from and I knew what I wanted her to be able to do in the end. I just had to get her from point A to point B, through her life experience. So, yes, I use a little outlining. I sometimes will put some key points. I say these points must be in this chapter. And I often say, do I want this to be a short chapter, a long chapter, intense or meditative, you know? So, I have those kinds of things in my mind, but it does unfold like a movie, and people who have read the book and said, oh, I could see this becoming, you know, a film or a TV thing because of the way it's written.
That's a high compliment, isn't it?
Quite a high compliment, really. So I just slid back on my wheelie chair here. Now I just fixed it. Now I'm better. pushed myself off when I shouldn't have. I mean, I can see the scenes happening. And I can see the settings as I create them. And one of the things that happens with me sometimes is that the setting grows. Like, I'll start off with a setting, but it'll grow there'll be a thing that hits my eye. I think inside the book, I think you can read a description of the inside of a cabin. I think it's there. At any rate, it's very vivid for me.
I thought it was because I had that same sense as I read part of the novel. I had exactly that sense because I could see exactly what you were talking about. And the visual aspect, I think, often is really, really important in a novel, especially like this. What made you start writing? I mean, you were in education, various levels, for 27 years. You retired. You really began to read Scandinavian noir fiction, and all of a sudden you decided to start writing, and you decided to start writing nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Why nonfiction?
Well, because it's really easy for an academic to write nonfiction, isn't it?
Great answer.
That's no trick. Most of the writing, or all the writing that I've done, has been either individual educational plans for handicapped kids, or course descriptions, or analyses of program. And prior to that, I was in a strand to become a. I actually didn't finish a doctoral program, but I was working towards becoming a researcher in medical biophysics. And so I kind of have this ability to research and to write in a factual way. So I never wrote anything of any proportion before. So that was my in.
Now that's a big jump from writing nonfiction to jumping to fiction. That's a whole different ballgame for the brain and for that creative process. What made you decide to do it?
Well, first of all, writing nonfiction is really, really hard work. Like, writing fiction is hard work. Writing nonfiction is really, really hard work. The amount of research that I had to do for that into neurobiology and memory and Taoist philosophy and Buddhist philosophy and see how all that fit. That was a real torturous mountain climb. Writing fiction is actually quite a bit of fun. Editing what you've done is definitely not fun, you know. But it's much more enjoyable, and I think in my head I live in a. I don't live in a fictional world. That's not the right way to do it. But I tend to think that way. I think in scenes, or I think when I think, plan ahead of what I'm going to do, it's always a bit like a movie in my head before it happens. So it wasn't that difficult. What was difficult was learning how to write good fiction that had flow and had, you know, it had the pacing and it had the intensity and it had the character development. And that was difficult. That was definitely difficult, considering I had to rewrite the entire book from a different point of view. You can see that when I got to the end, I went, oh yeah, that was the wrong turning. That was the wrong path. So, it was great.
I hope that some of our aspiring writers who may be listening to you talk will think about what you just said, because you had completed a manuscript and you looked at the manuscript and you said to yourself, this is not right. I have to go back and change this and rewrite the whole thing. So some people, when they write that first book, they'll read it again and they'll look at it and they'll go, oh, there's something wrong with this. I don't know. It's not right. And they just put it away. And that's all they do. So if they really, really, really want to write, it's like learning to paint. You're painting with words. And you have to study and you have to work at it. And it takes some editing and looking at your own work, which is really hard to do, and say, oh, wait, this is not good. This is not right. So I really like what you said. I think that should be very encouraging for people who are listening to us. You know, we've talked about the book. Now, you've got an excerpt from the book that I believe you'd like to share with our listeners. Let's do that.
Okay, let me just, I got it on my, I got it isolated on my Kobo reader, so it won't be too difficult. I'll just set the scene quickly. Tina has graduated. She's been through graduation. She did really well. She actually came up with top marks in writing and in speaking. So she has quite a bit of intelligence. This rubs her boyfriend, who she lives with, the wrong way, because he's a dropout. He's never finished high school. He's good at one thing and one thing only, and that's being a member of a biker gang and being the enforcer, which is his basic job. And when she was with him, she only asked one thing, and that is, could she finish high school? Because she got thrown out of her mom's house, which was in a different town, and she was 2 years away from completion. And he said, yeah, sure, go ahead. I don't care. That was the only freedom that he allowed her. So she's graduated. They've gone to the dinner dance. He's attended reluctantly. He's dressed in his best leathers, not in a suit or anything. And we've gotten towards the end of the dance. They get to the dance part. He's had the food part. And he's had enough. And so he insists they leave. He had other plans for the night. And so this begins where they're basically leaving the grad party. I remain quiet and tear up. He misses it and wouldn't have cared if he'd seen it. I'm his old lady, which according to Rob means obey or suffer the consequences. The only choice I have is to leave the party in the wake of his swaggering gait. I watch him mount his beloved Harley and caress the ape hangers with more affection than he does when he touches me. His mood improves as he brings the shovel head he tunes to perfection once a week to life, its deep-throated throbbing soothing him. He's ready to head out to wherever he plans to go. I bet he better hop on the bitch pad before he gets pissed off. When my boots are placed firmly on the pegs, I tap his helmet and signal, I'm ready to ride. Let's go, woman, he shouts. The bike accelerates gradually, and to my surprise, Rob cruises at a comfortable speed. I settle into the rhythm of the ride, inhale the sweet summer air, and let the wind do whatever it wishes to my coif. I have no idea where he's heading, but it's a great night for a ride. My mood begins to improve, too. Jewel would take me for rides on her Harley a few times a week when I was younger, and I fell in love with the feel of riding on motorcycles because of her. Riding with Rob is one of the few things we do together that I like as much as he does. I still have no idea where we're heading, but at this point I don't care until we pass the lake and climb into the hills at its south end. He follows the switchbacks until we reach a forested plateau at the end of the run. He's never brought me here before. My nerves prick a warning tingle up my spine. What's our destination? What's his plan for me tonight? He turns right on a gravel road that runs along a ridge. It takes us through a forest of tall spruce trees that block the light of the sun hanging in the western sky, ready to set. The sound of the engine grows louder in the canyon of trees, and the roar fills my air. This isn't good. Holy shit, he's turning down a darker, narrower laneway, and the roar of the engine is deafening. The lane opens into a secluded clearing with a rundown cabin in the middle. Rob parks the bike, kills the engine, and the roar of the shovelhead fades. The silence which remains fills the space, except for the trees whispering danger. I want to ask him to turn around and go home. Fat chance of that happening. I keep my mouth shut, like the obedient old lady I am. He unlocks the cabin door with a flourish, like it's the entryway to Shangri-La. That'll be enough, I think, to...
Wow. Larry, I don't want you to stop. You got me. Terrific choice. Terrific choice. Because we hear the language. Your descriptions are wonderful. I mean, you're an excellent, excellent writer. I really like your style very much. Your prose is beautiful. We have got to, I know that we have teased our readers, and I mean our listeners, and so I know now that they want to become readers. Let's talk about where they can find the book. Amazon is the logical choice for almost everyone. If they go to Amazon, Let me give them the specific name of the book and spell your name so they will find it easily on Amazon. There's a search feature when you go to the Amazon website. Put in Girl with the Rose Tattoo by Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. Click on it, and the book comes right up, and you will actually see a picture of Tina right there on the front cover. The Rose Tattoo, I think, is a really interesting detail, by the way, just sort of throwing that in, because we're talking about where to find the book. You can buy it right there on that page, or in the upper right-hand corner as you look at the book cover are the words, Look Inside. If you've never done this before, if you simply click on that Look Inside, those two words, the book metaphorically opens. In other words, you'll be able to read an excerpt from the book. And what will happen is exactly what just happened as we listened to Larry read. This is the setup that goes prior to the piece that he read. And when the excerpt stops, you want the excerpt to continue. And so right there, you'll be able to buy the book. Now, I know you and I talked, Larry, and it's available some other places. Let's tell our listeners where else they can find the book.
Yeah, I have it available for Kobo, which is Roucatan. You may or may not be that familiar with it in the States, but in Canada and English-speaking places and in Europe, Kobo is quite popular. And the other is Barnes & Noble. On Kobo, it's only available as an ebook, and on Barnes & Noble, it's available both as an ebook or as a print book. But I have to say that I like the Amazon site the best of all, but it is available at those three locations.
Are you going to do an audio book from this?
Well, you know what? I've been toying with that, and the problem with an audiobook is, it's not a problem. I haven't decided, you know, am I going to be the reader? Well, I don't know if that's a good idea. Do I need a professional reader? Well, that's a great idea, but that's also a costly idea. So right now it's in abeyance, but I would really like to do an audiobook because I think it lends itself to that kind of a format.
Your prose does. Your prose is beautiful. It really will lend itself perfectly to an audio book. And my two cents are you need a female reader for this. So it will be Tina's voice. Yeah. Now, you have a website. Let's tell our listeners where they can find your website.
Okay. Well, the easiest one to go to is streetfictionwriter.com, which has a pointer to my... If you click on that, it'll send you to my WordPress site. And the WordPress site is slightly different. I think there's, I'm trying to remember whether there's hyphens or underscores. But if you go to the GoDaddy site, which is a one page, and click on the link, it'll take you to the more detailed website, which has not only information about this book, but the other books that I'm working on.
You're working on this book, Girl with the Rose Tattoo, is actually one of the Star Twins thriller series. And you're working on the next book in the Star Twins thriller series. Is that right?
Yes, that's the one that I've decided to work on right now. The second book actually involves the antagonist. Basically how Robert Bugs Crawley got to be such a nasty man.
And we'll all want to know because he is nasty. You're also you're on Twitter, but you're doing something that I just think is so exciting. How can they find you on your Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
Twitter is Larry Weiss 3.
And you've got a Pinterest page. Tell us about
it. I do.
Yeah,
I
love
this.
That's
the one I'm excited about.
Yeah, me too.
And that's at lweiss0416. And that'll take you to my Pinterest page. And what that is there's actually three boards The three of the boards are very well developed, and they revolve around the three principal tattoos that my protagonist has: a lotus, a rose, and a tattoo of a saying on her spine. So I've been collecting those, and that's been a lot of fun.
I think that's just a terrific idea. I hope people will go look at that Pinterest page. Now, I know you're also planning to do some videos for the YouTube channel. Is that in the works?
Yeah, actually, I'm sitting in front of my setup now, so I've got some little studio lights and a good microphone, and I'm just actually looking around for something that approximates a biker jacket, because I thought I should wear that when I'm when I'm doing these. So that's been a little difficult, but I'm going to the local around here. It's, I don't know whether they have them in the States, but it's called Value Village, and it's basically a Salvation Army thing, except they collect for diabetes and various health issues, and they have all kinds of stuff. So one of these days soon, I'm going to just spend time trying to find something that approximates a biker's jacket, because I think that's what I should wear. And I need a do-rag as well, that I don't have.
Well, of course, my first reaction, I'm in Texas, and my first reaction is to say to you, go to the Harley-Davidson website, and
I've been there, actually, and I want to talk to the local guys here and make sure they won't be offended by me wearing that on YouTube, because in my research on biker, the biker code and biker gangs, yeah, they don't mind you buying their goods because it raises money for their rides and things like that. But they sure don't like you wearing them around. So I want to get sort of a clearance from the local bikers out here in the Hamilton area. I think they're Hell's Angels, but that's okay.
I love it. Larry, you are so delightful. I want to give you the opportunity to have the last word about your book. When the reader reads the very last page of the novel and they close the cover, whether metaphorically or electronically, they turn off their machine, do you want them to leave with just having been told a terrific, compelling story? Or is there another message that you want the reader to take away?
Well, actually, I think the message I'd like them to take away is something that kind of happened to me as I wrote. And I've looked around, and this does happen to writers. I've kind of fallen in love with my protagonist and her sidekick, literally, in the sense that when things happen to them, I actually feel it. Like, I've actually shed a tear or two when I've written some scenes. So I would really like them to also fall in love with my characters. And I would like them to think, oh, what's going to happen to these two girls in the future? Because there is a future for them in another book that I've sketched out. So we haven't touched on some of the exploration, Tina's exploration of her sexuality and how she uses that to her advantage. But I'll leave that for my readers to enjoy and explore.
Larry Weiss, you are delightful to talk with. This is a compelling, interesting book. You've done a beautiful job with your female characters. That was one of the big surprises for me. Such a pleasure to talk to you. I hope we get to talk again. Thank you so much for being with us today on Books on Air.
Yes, and thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about my work.
Don't forget, you can find Girl with the Rose Tattoo by Larry Weiss on Amazon.com. You've been listening to the Books on Air podcast, brought to you on WebTalkRadio.net. You can also hear this podcast on iTunes and iHeartRadio. I'm Suzanne Harris, and I really hope you'll join our next Books on Air podcast. Remember, you never know who's going to be here. Thank you so much for listening.